From KUT News and the Texas Tribune, this is The Ticket.
We demand our liberty.
You and I know that America deserves better.
Americans have come back from some pretty tough economic times.
Crony capitalism is indeed alive and well.
Today I am running for the presidency of the United States of America.
I'm Ben Philpott.
And I'm Jay Root.
This week on the show, the favorite son of Texas Republicans has returned home. No, not Rick Perry. Ted Cruz is back for a swing through Texas. He remains a top alternative in polls for those not picking Donald Trump. He's back this week to make sure he'll win the Texas primary.
And if he's gonna win it, he'll need the help of the state's powerful grassroots network. So we'll talk with Grassroots America, We the People leader Joanne Fleming about Cruz's rise in Texas and his chances in the GOP presidential primary.
And on the straight ticket, Jay gets his wish. It looks like Texas will play a very important role in the presidential nominating process. But first, Jay, our podcast focuses on the 2016 presidential race, but Sunday night we got our first announced candidate for 2020.
As you probably could have guessed by this moment, I have decided in 2020 to run for president.
It's rapper, producer, and Kardashian husband Kanye West, of course. He made that announcement at the MTV Video Music Awards on Sunday, and just like we do with the 2016 candidates, it's time for another episode of Stump Interrupted, where we break down a candidate's campaign announcement speech. So, here's our first clip.
I'm not no politician, bro!
He says he's not a politician, but he's savvy enough to recognize that according to recent polls, three of the top five candidates running for the GOP nomination are also not politicians. And if Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina can do it, so can Kanye.
Y'all might be thinking right now, I wonder, did he smoke something before he came out here? The answer is yes. I rolled up a little something. I knocked the edge off.
Here you can see him really pushing for the youth vote, and it may already be working. I saw a few things online, one on a video game YouTube channel. That's a channel where you can watch someone play a video game. And he says that he's ready to vote for Mr. West in 2020. He said, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, if the choice is an old white guy and an old white woman, then he's going for Yeezus.
Now, at this point, you might be saying, why in the world are you breaking down what Kanye West said at the MTV Video Music Awards? He can't be serious. Maybe not. But with Donald Trump holding a big lead in the GOP, clearly anything could happen. And I really want to see who he appoints or who would be his vice presidential candidate. I'm going to pull for Willie Nelson.
Okay, now let's move back to the 2016 race, and one of the very few candidates who has been able to survive during the summer of Trump, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. He's also one of the few candidates to not attack Donald Trump, and has stayed popular among those in the GOP who don't want a career politician, or, as Cruz might also call them, a squishy conservative, a point he loves to bring up on the campaign trail and in the first GOP debate.
There is a reason that we have $18 trillion in debt. Because as conservatives, as Republicans, we keep winning elections. We got a Republican House, we got a Republican Senate, and we don't have leaders who honor their commitments. I will always tell the truth and do what I said I would do.
Cruz has a new reason now to hate the way his party runs Congress this week, as President Obama has the 34 senators he needed supporting his Iran treaty. NPR had a great explanation on how this process works, actually, but here's the gist. It would usually take 67 votes for the Senate to approve a treaty. Instead, the Senate is voting whether to disapprove of it. President Obama can then veto the disapproval, and with 34 senators on his side, he doesn't have to worry about the Senate overriding that veto. And there you go, the deal stays in place.
Obviously, this Iran deal lets the Cruz campaign go off on one of his favorite attack lines, and that is foreign policy. So here we have a bite that shows Cruz again, once again, at the GOP debate.
And over the last 6.5 years, we've seen the consequences of the Obama-Clinton foreign policy. Leading from behind is a disaster. We have abandoned and alienated our friends and allies, and our enemies are stronger. Radical Islam is on the rise. Iran's on the verge of acquiring a nuclear weapon.
So he's got a rally coming up on September 9th in Washington, D.C., essentially a anti-Iran deal rally. But what do you think, Jay? Is this something that can, I guess, can the steam keep going in this, considering we're going to have this vote? The Senate's not going to be able to override a veto. It's going to be in place. You know, is this something that you think he'll continue to harp on?
Well, they're all harping on it. All of the Republican candidates pretty much have the same position that this deal stinks. They don't want it. It's going to endanger Israel and us. But this also allows Cruz to play to his strengths, which are that he's not the go-along to get-along candidate, and that, you know, what, that the Republicans and Democrats are all in it together against you, the little guy, and I'm sticking up for you. And even if it's unpopular, although in this case for him, it's popular with his base. But, you know, he gets a rally. He gets to talk about it and draw some media attention. I think that's what's going on here.
And it does continue to let him have that war against the GOP leaders in Congress. That NPR explainer really did kind of focus on that whole
go along to get along. Right.
Because it really said, you know, the whoever is in power sits back and looks and sees, you know, well, if we really make a dramatic change here, that really might muck up different things. So we need to figure out a way to be against this, but still allow everything to happen. And of course, this is exactly what it does. You can have every single Republican senator and even some of the Democrats voting against this deal or voting to disapprove of this deal. And yet the deal will stay in place. And so that, you know, keeps us in good relations with UN, with foreign banks, with all these different entities.
Right. Like Chuck Schumer, leading Democrat in the Senate, are going to be the majority leader. Is against it. He's going to vote against the deal, or I guess vote to disapprove of the deal. Yeah. And you know how these things work. The president cuts people loose and says, okay, we're going to let the certain amount of people, certain amount of Democrats campaign against this or vote against it, but we got to have enough to make sure that it gets, you know, that our deal is approved.
And with this deal in place, I think even with Schumer voting against it, we can all still watch Amy Schumer's show on Comedy Central. Okay, so we've hit two of Cruz's favorite attack points, the GOP, his own party, and foreign policy. Here's a third, Cruz, on immigration.
There's 7 billion people across the face of the globe, many of whom want to come to this country. If they come legally, great, but if they come illegally and they get amnesty, that is how we fundamentally change this country. And it really is striking. A majority of the candidates on this stage have supported amnesty. I have never supported amnesty, and I led the fight against Chuck Schumer's Gang of Eight amnesty legislation in the Senate.
Well, he's got a point, which is that he is more conservative on immigration than a lot of people that are running for president as Republicans. Not Donald Trump, however. And in fact, I thought it was very interesting that Megyn Kelly tried to pin Ted Cruz down on whether or not he would deport pretty much everyone, including the parents of kids who were born here and hence are American citizens, and would you deport their parents? And he just would not answer that question.
Well, you know, it's funny you should bring that up. Here's tape of him avoiding the answer with Megyn Kelly.
Megyn, I get that that's the question you want to ask. That's also the question every mainstream media liberal journalist wants to ask. They focus exclusively on the 12 million people. It is a distraction from how we actually solve the problem. You know, it's also the question Barack Obama wants to focus on.
Well, why is it so hard? Why don't you just say yes or no?
Because, Megyn, we need to solve the problem.
Well, you know, the thing is that I find really interesting about this is that Cruz is really known for straight talk and blunt talk. And no matter how you slice it, he wouldn't answer that question. And I thought that was that's an interesting position to have for somebody like Ted Cruz. And I think that it's one where, you know, another candidate could sort of push back on that has an answer. But I mean, maybe he could have said, you know, no. I mean, there's some people that it's going to be impractical to to deport. I mean, some if they have kids here, I mean, maybe that's not practical, but I guess then that would be seen as going along to get along. Right. And on the other hand, if you say, let's just deport everybody, that's not seen as practical, and that's maybe that's also so. I mean, it's sort of got him in a rock and a hard place, and he didn't want to be pinned down on that.
It's interesting though. Ted Cruz does not really think about practicality, or it appears that he doesn't think about practicality when he's, you know, really sticking to these ideals, these big picture, this is the way the country should be run ideals that he's running on in this race. You know, he talks about abolishing the IRS without talking about how are we going to collect any taxes at all. He talks about
Obamacare as well. When you know, he said, you know, we're going to get this grassroots army and we're going to stop this, and obviously it didn't happen, and that was seen as very impractical. So he obviously doesn't mind taking impractical positions, as you said, and that's why this Megyn Kelly bite really stood out to me. Because it was usually he answers pretty much, he'll talk, yeah. He might give you a longer answer. He might sort of filibuster the answer, but you can usually get him around to answering it.
Now, there's one topic that we didn't pull tape on, but I wanted to touch on real quickly. And that is, he still is kind of the torch carrier for pushback to the Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriage. He's had a couple of religious liberty. It's no longer about same-sex marriage, right? It's about religious liberties. That's the evolution of this issue on the Republican Party side. And he's had a couple of religious liberty rallies in Washington and in Iowa. And the message continues to be, you know, we should be allowed. We can't have government coming in and telling us either have to perform a same-sex marriage or have to rent out a dance hall for a same-sex marriage or whatever the case may be. And it's been interesting. I have not heard him, though, this week talk about that clerk in Kentucky, although he has kind of in other interviews said, well, yes, we need to obey the laws of the United States, which this woman in Kentucky is not doing.
You know, I mean, he is very comfortable in the position of speaking up for people who feel like the country has slipped away and that whatever institution it is, whether it's the Congress or the Supreme Court, that they've done things that are lawless. And even though it's pretty clear that on gay marriage the ship has sailed, he gets a lot of support from people who want to fight that even now, even though it seems like it's too late.
Well, and, you know, we got a glimpse of that in one of the first cuts we played just a few minutes ago in talking about immigration. He said, you know, that people coming here illegally and getting amnesty will fundamentally change this country. And that appears to kind of be the point that he likes to bring up over and over again to, I don't know if scare is the right word, but to entice those who do not want to see a change or who are already very upset about the way they see the country changing, to jump on and say, this is our guy. Ted Cruz didn't just accidentally become a U.S. senator. He started at the bottom of the polls, and after months on the campaign trail, he gained the overwhelming support of the Republican grassroots. That includes the state's numerous Tea Party organizations. Joanne Fleming knows a little bit about that. As executive director of Grassroots America, We the People, she's been an advocate and ally for Cruz and other new Tea Party candidates in Texas. Ms. Fleming, thanks so much for joining us today.
Just great to be here. Thank you for asking.
So, do you remember the first time you talked with Ted Cruz?
I do, actually, and it was before he thought about running for U.S. Senate. You know, Ted had talked about running for Attorney General, and my friend Jason Wright, who is now his state director, introduced me to Ted in a little breakfast diner in Tyler, and we just sat and talked about issues, and I was very intrigued by him because he's very direct, blunt, direct-spoken person, plain-spoken person, and I liked it.
Joanne, take us back a little bit to that moment, because to the 2012 campaign when he won this U.S. Senate race, and a lot of people thought that it was sort of crazy to take on the establishment. At the time, of course, the establishment candidate was Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, and he was seen as the going away favorite to win this seat. How did Ted Cruz beat the establishment?
Well, by actually just amassing an enormous grassroots army of conservatives across the state that were fed up with the GOP establishment. You know, we have a saying among us that the GOP, big government Republicans are just happy to be in charge. They like big government as long as they can be in charge of it. And so we're pretty tired of that. We're tired of their broken promises. And we knew David Dewhurst to be, you know, a moderate big government Republican. We knew a lot about his voting record. We knew quite a lot, well, about his record in the Senate, the way he handled the Senate, who he put in charge of Senate business. And we knew quite a bit about the way the state was spending money and didn't like it and decided that he wasn't fit for a promotion. So after, you know, a few candidate debates and candidate forums and hearing Ted Cruz, my organization was one of the first ones to get behind Ted. And once we hit the ground with Ted, there was no letting up. And so he, you know, Ted Cruz embraced females in his campaign, volunteer activists. We called ourselves the Cruz Girls. And we went around with Ted, spoke for him and with him at different, you know, statewide swings through the state. So it was just, it was a groundswell of support. And I would say that it was populated by a great number of people who'd never really been involved that much in a campaign, but they're what we call grassroots conservatives, small government conservatives, and independents.
Were you surprised at all when he ran for president this year, and how do you think he's doing?
No, I thought he probably would, and I had been given a little heads up around Christmas time that we'd probably be getting a call from the senator a little bit later in the year. I wasn't surprised about it because, you know, Ted Cruz is a man that understands that our country is headed in the wrong direction. And when he says it, though, he can tell you exactly how we got here, and he can tell you how he thinks we need to get out of it. And Ted has done everything in Washington that he promised us that he would do. He's fought against the GOP establishment and is fine with calling them out. So, you know, consequently, what he gets in return for that is a lot of disdain. And, you know, John Boehner just, what, last week called him a jackass. Well, you know, we're pretty fed up with the GOP establishment. And since they've broken every promise they made last year, for re-election, we're just ready for it. We're ready for a change, and I think that's what you see in the presidential primary on the GOP side. You see the outsiders that are surging ahead of the what I call status quo candidates, like Mr. Bush.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you about those surging outsiders. You know, recent polls, both nationally and in Iowa, do have people that you might consider, you know, anti-establishment, you know, or Tea Party favorites that are in the lead. You've got Trump, Carson, Fiorina, and then, of course, Ted Cruz, even though he's elected official. It's just been a couple of years. Do you believe that any of those four are going to be who the Republican Party ends up selecting?
I do. I really do. And I think what's important here is that I believe what you're going to have is they're going to attract more people to the primary than we've had in the past. Because I, you know, as I travel around the state of Texas, people are pretty fed up with just the politicians as usual, and they're tired of just hearing rhetoric. They want to believe there's somebody that's going to fight for the United States to, once again, as I call it, we should be feared by our enemies, and we should be respected and trusted by our allies. And so you see on many levels, I mean, the disrespect we have for law enforcement, the way that we care more about corporate welfare dollars than we do about taking care of our own veterans. You know, it's just the business as usual. I mean, they all run on education, but they never do anything different. And so people are just really tired of that. And I think so what they're looking for are fresh voices and people who will just get away from the rhetoric and the talking points and just speak plainly to the American people. And I'm happy to see the candidates take on the GOP establishment as much as taking on the Democrats. I think, you know, they've both held hands and taken us where we are today. And I think the issue of personal liberty is something that's very important to people. It certainly should be important what we call the, you know, the youth of America, those people who have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in college loans and debt and can't find a good job. You know, those people, the future of those young people is at stake, and I think they're looking for somebody who will put America first and who will say, you know, we've got to get our business straight. And so I think that's why, you know, just the blunt, plain spokenness. And, of course, you have in the front runners, you have different shades of that. I mean, you know, Dr. Carson is a very direct man, but he's a very soft-spoken man. He's not bombastic. And so, but they all have something in common. They aren't Washington insiders.
Let me ask you real quickly, though, about rhetoric. I was actually reading an article on a Ted Cruz stop in New Hampshire this last week where he was saying, you know, the line that he often says about abolishing the IRS. And the reporter on the scene got a quote from someone there who, you know, said they were a Republican and was at this thing, but said that they felt like that. That statement was rhetoric that, you know, how in the world are you going to just get rid of the IRS? And he, I guess his complaint was he wanted to hear more about, maybe, I guess in his terms, you know, how realistically someone like Ted Cruz would run, Washington as opposed to coming in and throwing out things like, well, let's abolish the IRS, which might be, you know, almost impossible to get done.
Well, you know, I think that we are going to be a little bit further into the campaign to hear the hows. I think a lot of the folks are just now beginning to put their policy papers together. But I think it is important. It's important for Senator Cruz and for all the front runners in particular to talk about how they intend to do it. Look, the IRS is one of those rogue agencies that's bigger than life, bigger than we can imagine. They have old, antiquated computer systems. They apparently, you know, that agency doesn't talk to any other agency. I mean, we just learned last week that people who qualify for subsidized housing are never, ever checked again for eligibility requirements. I mean, how is that in any way right? So I think someone who will take the approach of, you know, segment by segment of the government, looking at what we call putting government back inside a constitution-sized box. Well, constitutionally speaking, we do need to have taxes. I mean, I'm not a zero tax person. I mean, anybody that's thoughtful whatsoever understands we have to pay taxes to run the basics of government. But we need to do it in a wise way, not in a stupid way. And I think what we have today is stupid government, particularly the federal government. It's just stupid because anybody that tried to run a business that way would soon be out of business. And frankly, I think that we've made it harder to get rid of people who can't do the job. And I think that's one of the reasons that Mr. Trump has been popular is because actually people in their minds can visualize somebody like Mr. Trump looking at a rogue agent director saying, you're fired.
You know, when I was looking at the lineup for the presidential race, I thought, you know, early on, I thought there's no way anybody could be more brash and bold than Ted Cruz. And then along came Donald Trump. And I heard Megyn Kelly, for example, on Fox News asking Ted Cruz to say whether or not he would deport the people who are, you know, all of the people that are here illegally, as Donald Trump has said. And then he wouldn't answer that question. So I thought, well, have we actually found an even more brash candidate and somebody who's willing to just tell it like it is? Is Trump more like Cruz than Cruz is?
Well, you know, I think what I like to say about Donald Trump is this. He, for all of the whining and the gnashing of teeth going on in the GOP establishment, I heard today that the big-time donors are so worried about Jeb that they're talking about bringing Mitt out of mothballs. You know, how productive was that last time? Because they, look, you know what? We have the establishment people in the GOP who would rather burn the place down than to allow somebody that is a straight talker, a conservative, to be in charge of the place. I mean, they would just rather implode the whole thing than have somebody come in and try something different. So I'll say this about Ted. He's very thoughtful. I think he's a thinker. Anybody that's really done much of an interview or spent very much time with him knows that he's very much a thinker. And what I know is that he is, when he's asked a question, he is going through in his mind the constitutional steps, the lawful steps, the process that you would go through to get something accomplished. I do know that about him. And so I think sometimes he's going to take people through step one, step two, step three, rather than going from A to Z. But you know, personally, I like to hear that because I like to understand how something's going to be accomplished. So I think sometimes, you know, he will have it dialed back a little bit and will not say it exactly the same way that Trump does. But, you know, I don't think the American people are looking for cookie cutter straight talkers. I think they're just looking for somebody that's going to have answers and somebody that will be completely different from the status quo. That's what they're looking for. And the GOP has actually created the Donald Trump-sized vacuum, leadership vacuum. So for all the ones, you know, that are having a hissy fit because Donald Trump and even Ben Carson are actually neck and neck in some polls. I mean, you know, for the people that are wringing their hands over that, they created it. And they did. They created those spots, those vacancies in leadership by being dishonest with the American people.
Well, you have Ted Cruz coming to Texas this week. Is this all about the March 1st primary? Is it a homecoming for him? What is it?
Well, I think what he's doing is he's coming back to the state of Texas because, frankly, we're the ones that gave him his head start on his way to running for president. And if you look at where he's making his fly-around stops in Texas, he's stopping over with Connie Burton in Fort Worth. He's stopping with me and Tyler. Then he's going down to Kingwood with Robin Lennon. And we are three of many grassroots leaders, Tea Party leaders, who supported Senator Cruz when he was in the negatives. You know, we always laugh about, everybody said, well, who is Ted Cruz? And he talks about being negative in the polls, and we just worked really hard. We were committed to sticking with him no matter what. And if you all remember, it was a pretty ugly race. It was a very ugly race with Dewhurst. And so we stood by him, and then the money came in. And I will tell you, in the presidential race, all across the United States, Ted Cruz and his dad have been putting together grassroots armies, and there is nobody that will work harder on the ground than Ted Cruz and his people. Nobody.
So before we even started recording this conversation, when we just called you a few minutes back, you said that Ted Cruz was a low-maintenance politician. Explain that a little bit before we let you go.
Well, low-maintenance politicians and elected officials are people that you don't have to call on every vote. You don't have to ask them, well, where do you stand on this and where do you stand on that? Ted keeps his word to the folks, and he is, you don't have to watch every little thing he does. And that is a rarity. Even in conservative circles, there are some that you just have to keep propping up and reminding them what it means to be a constitutional conservative, a small government conservative. We never have to do that with Ted. And so he is, I like to say that he's a great example for others, and I frankly have been very happy with the relationships that Ted Cruz has built with some of our young conservatives that are in the Texas House and Senate. He's developed great relationships with them, and I think he's a great role model for them. I hope he grows some more low-maintenance elected officials.
Joanne Fleming is the executive director of Grassroots America, We the People, and she's ready for Ted Cruz to take this election.
Thank you for asking me to be on the podcast today. I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. And now, here's the straight ticket. Move over, Iowa. It's not just about you anymore. Oh, I know, you still get to go first, even though I've already made it clear that I think that's a load of pig manure. But you know what? You and your buddies in New Hampshire and South Carolina aren't the only states with some game in the 2016 presidential primaries. Ted Cruz grabbed headlines recently for taking his tour bus through a bunch of southern states that are holding contests on March 1, places where many voters haven't seen a presidential candidate in years, if ever. I don't think he stood in front of a hay bale or ate a single stick of fried butter the whole time. These days, hardly a week goes by that we don't have a candidate blow into Texas, which is also holding its primary on March 1st. And unlike in past elections, they're not coming just to suck up campaign dollars. They're actually holding rallies and interacting with voters. Hillary and Bernie have been here, Jeb and the Donald recently visited the Texas-Mexico border, and this week alone, Scott Walker is holding a rally in Dallas while Cruz is staging a multi-city campaign tour. Multiple candidates crisscrossing Texas in search of votes, border security being discussed at the actual border, real pit barbecue being served at campaign rallies. Okay, I just guessed on that last one. But my fellow ticket lovers, let me say this. I'm not sure what's going to happen in the 2016 election, but this is already some change I can believe in.
Don't forget about our live podcast and debate watching party coming up on September 16th. We're having it at Google Fiberspace in downtown Austin, but we know not all of you can make it. So for our out-of-town fans, you can watch a live stream of the show on our Google Plus page or on our YouTube channel. We'll make sure to add those links into the show notes, and you'll see a few tweets coming out in the days just before the event.
For those in town, doors will open at 7 o'clock with the live show starting around 7:20 with our special guest, Washington Post writer Jennifer Rubin. And then we'll sit back and enjoy the debate starting at 8 o'clock. Please make sure to RSVP. We'll also include a link to the RSVP page in the show notes.
Got a topic or a question you'd like us to explore on a future episode? You can call us 512-943-2016 or send us an email, theticket2016@gmail.com. Please tell us your name when you call so we can give you credit if we use your question or suggestion.
Like what you're hearing? Please subscribe on iTunes. Just search The Ticket 2016 and please give us a review. We're also on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and just about any other podcast catcher you may use. And to keep up on any ticket-related news, you can follow us on Twitter, @TheTicket2016.
The Ticket is a co-production of KUT News and the Texas Tribune. Matt Largy is our editor, David Alvarez is the studio engineer, and our theme music is by Ben Root. Thanks for listening.